Good morning. It's 8:33 a.m. on Tuesday, May the 3rd, 2016. And I'm out and walking. I'm a little breathless because I had some jamming music this morning to walk to. Yesterday I got through another 1,000 words. It wasn't easy, but I made it. It should have been a long day of writing. It should have been a wonderful day of uninterrupted writing. Yeah, that worked well, as one might imagine. I'm not sure what the day is going to do. I've ceased trying to predict. In theory, I don't have to do anything until 3 o'clock. In practice, yeah, that's not going to work. I know that's what it's supposed to be. So that's probably not going to how it's going to be how it goes. I know that's not going to be how it goes there. I had all the words. I'm not sure I had them all in the right order or uninterrupted by other words that didn't belong. Anyway, yesterday I started killing off Facebook pages and inviting people to join the Golden Age of the Solar Clipper Facebook group if they wanted to. And yeah, they wanted to. I think we've picked up 100 new members today in the last 24 hours. And I haven't checked in the last 20 minutes. Well, actually longer than that. I haven't checked in the last hour. Half hour. Almost an hour. Because I've been taking the kid to school. And not really to school, but to the Civic Center, because they're doing the rehearsal for the gala tonight, and then fiddling around with that, and then coming home. So yeah, it's been a busy morning, and it's only 8:30. So some of my pages went away. Well, they're scheduled for deletion, 14 days. I have to wait 14 days before I can purge them. They're scheduled for deletion. And I've set a couple of others with a notice saying I'm going to close them at the end of the month, beginning of June. Now I have to remember to do that, but probably won't be a matter, won't be a problem. Well, we've picked up a lot of new followers on the Facebook group. And they seem to be fitting in nicely. They seem to be enjoying themselves with the additional content. So I'm good. We're okay. But it's this conversion process can be a bit distracting. I go over once an hour, add 8 or 10 people, and go through the sponge list and add the sponge numbers. And then go back to whatever it was. But at the moment, this morning while I've been trying to wake up a little bit, I was working on a blog post for the Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers. Tomorrow I've got a post about prologues. It was a, what do I want to call it? A commissioned piece. That Wendy Howard is one of the major players, and I'm not sure if she's president, ex-president, future president. I don't know. She's a board of directors or whatever. She was looking for a piece to justify prologues. And she asked me if I would write one, and I did, and I came to the realization that prologues do serve a purpose. It's just that most people use them badly. And that if they're done correctly, they actually enhance the story. Whereas most, I think particularly newer authors, use them as a kind of crutch, as a scaffold to the story that they're trying to write. And so they write this prologue to set the scene, to set the stage, to introduce the characters, to hook the reader because the beginning of the book is boring. Okay, well, it just... Stop. Stop there. If the beginning of the book is boring, fix the boring. Don't add a prologue. I mean, that seems like such an easy thing to do. It seems like such a much more logical thing to participate in. Fix the part that's boring. For crying out loud. Openings are hard. And they don't get any easier if you make the opening into a prologue. They just get more difficult. Because there are people like me who see prologue and throw the book away. Just because. I'm reading one now, and I read through the prologue. Having gone through my tirade, I'm reading a book now. I'm not going to tell you what it is, because it's... It's irritating. But I read the prologue. And frankly, the prologue, so far, has added zero. Zero, zero, zero. Zip, nada, nisht. Yes, I know the backstory now. I know where the sword came from. I know what the dragons promised. And you know what? That weakened the rest of the beginning of the story. I'm about halfway through, and I'm cursing this author because this prologue not only didn't make the story better, it made it worse. So I'm a little peeved. I'm going to finish reading the story just to see. But I'm kind of peeved. It's also so filled with cliches, it's almost ridiculous. Everybody is a hidden wizard or a kid who's a dragon but doesn't know it because he's forgotten how to shapeshift. The dragons are dying. Oh dear, the dragons are hiding underground and dying. Whatever shall we do? How about if we get the dragons out from underneath the ground so they can fly again? What do you say? You think that might help? I know this is where it's going. I know perfectly well this is where it's going. It's dumb. And yet, I'm reading it. I want to see... This is one of those books that I'm reading for... And if any of you is the author of this, I'm sorry for crapping on your book. I'm not going to say who it is. I don't think it's anybody here, but it could be a pen name. But the stories... This is one of those stories that I'm reading to see how it's done. And in this case, I'm reading it to see how it's done so I don't do that. Anyway... So I mentioned, I guess, yesterday or the day before that I was doing a master class in science fiction, fantasy, and horror. And Chris Moody asked if I would share my master class with you, all of you, him in particular, but all of you. And the answer is, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I don't even know what goes into a masterclass. It's one of the things I have to... It's one of those answers I need to come up with pretty darn quick because masterclass is in 2 weeks. It's a week from Saturday, the 14th. So, 11 days. And the problem is that I can't get any read on who the audience is. I can't get any read on what... the audience is looking for in terms of masterclass. I've been warned that there will be a lot of people who are neophytes, who are new authors. And there will be some who are relatively experienced authors. Most of the people will be attending for the morning sessions, meeting with the agents, and for the pitch sessions, meeting with the agents, and for the feedback sessions, meeting with the agents, which is, yeah, that's not anything I'm interested in. So the question is, what would a masterclass in science fiction consists of, I mean, part of it has to be like acknowledging the roots of science fiction. I mean, it's a Mary Shelley. There might be somebody who came before Mary Shelley, but Frankenstein, I think, is the first Monk Post. The first science fiction novel. And then we have to go to Jules Verne. And then we pretty much snap all the way forward to the 50s, or probably the 40s, the pulps. I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was in the 40s where the term space opera as a derogatory term was first coined. And so, you know, what is space opera? And the historic definition is horse opera with spaceships and lasers instead of horses and six-shooters. And it's kind of a derogatory term. The horse opera is a twist on soap opera. And it wasn't soap opera because it was squeaky clean and sudsy. It was soap opera because these are the programs that were sponsored by soap companies like Ivory Snow. And they started on the radio before they came to television and became a fixture. And say what you will about soap operas, they succeeded. I mean, nobody's going to call, some people will. We're not going to hear about soap opera writers the same in 100 years the same way we hear about Shakespeare. But the reality is they succeeded. They told stories that millions of people tuned in to see, listen to for decades. I don't know how long General Hospital was on. I don't know how long All My Children was on. It was a long time. And to keep an audience engaged in a serialized fiction that long, that takes some serious writing chops. Yeah, some years were better, some teams were better, some teams were not. They're all pretty much team written, I believe. Cranking out that much content daily has to have been an immense challenge. So, horse operas, which were named for soap operas because they were generally poo-pooed as cowboys and Indians and six guns and shootouts and lots of horses. Some cows. Sorry, cattle. And then space opera, which was the sort of lowbrow pulp shoot 'em up entertainment. There's a certain reality to that. There's a certain validity to that construct, because people are really easily led. Stories with a lot of physical stakes, a lot of blood and gore, and a lot of danger and daring do. Those are stories that are not easy to tell, but they are in its truest form escapist literature, in that they take the reader into a story that in real life, anything approaching reality, they would never be able to participate in. And so they get this vicarious thrill of being the bad guy and winning the day and sometimes getting the girl in the end. And I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stories that are like that. There is nothing wrong with those stories. Don't mistake what I'm saying with a critique I'm saying it with a certain level of admiration. They're like romance novels. Well, you know the plot before you open the cover. And yet, people like Nora Roberts just drive me crazy. Because it doesn't matter. I pick up a Nora Roberts book. If I start reading, I am going to finish the book. If I get a paragraph into it, and I never get a Nora Roberts book where I don't at least get a paragraph into it as soon as I have it in my hot little hand, I'm going to read the book. The Death series, the J.D. Robb Death series, I don't know. I'm not too sure about those, but Nora Roberts and her romances, all the people who master romance, you poo-poo them at your peril. These are writers who start with a pretty well-defined formula. I mean, we talk about people say, "Oh, well, it's a formulaic. I don't want to write a formula." Really, why? Because if you can write a formula novel and make it engaging in drawing the reader in, even in when the reader knows the formula, damn, that's good writing. That's good writing. And so, this idea of space opera, science fiction as appealing to the common man, the low brow escapist individuals like kids who really don't have a lot of experience with the world and are looking for ideas. Why not? Why not? So, space opera. The original definition is sort of not very useful in the common parlance, in the current marketplace. In large part because in the past it referred not to a genre of science fiction, but it was a sobriquet, a shortcut insult to people who were writing things that the elites in the science fiction world looked down on, because sci-fi was hi-fi and it wasn't science fiction. It wasn't legit. It wasn't literature. It was popular. It was pulp. It was stories that people wanted to read, who haunted bookstores and bought magazines in order to get the latest stories from whoever. Whoever. Why you won't see space opera in the pages of Amazing. Yeah, where's Amazing now? So I don't know if I have anything to say. Jeez, I just realized what I was about to say. I don't know if I have anything to say about science fiction. I don't know if I have anything to say about the field or being a master of the genre. Part of it is understanding where the genre came from. Part of it is understanding what makes up, how are the various pieces, and how do they relate, and well, perhaps I'll find more to say about it tomorrow. But at any rate, I'm at the back gate right now, which means tomorrow's another day. And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.